Welcome to the Real Family Guys podcast with Jeff Emery and Trey Gibson, the show where education and experience collide to help you go deeper in your parenting. Broadcasting from Abilene, Texas, here are your hosts, Jeff and Trey.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Real Family Guys podcast. This is the show where experience and education collide
completely
to take you deeper in your parenting. The date today is February the 8th, 2012. We're actually going to be covering an article today called 51 Good Things or Nice Things to Say to Your Kid to Make Him Feel Better. Now, we're not going to go through all 51 of those. If y'all's heinies just fell off when you heard that, Jeff and I are not going to go through all 51 of these. We picked out our top favorite ones that we're going to go on. I am here with my good buddy, Jeff Emery, and co-host. How are you today, sir?
You know, I'm doing great. One of the best things about parenting is, in my opinion, no offense to single parents out there who are doing double duty, but having your other parent who helps you out and tells you wonderful things and even is willing to correct you when you're wrong. And so as I'm sitting here, we're recording, you bust out with the intro there and you tell the date. And my lovely wife walked up, tapped over my shoulder and pointed out that when you said the date, you said 2012.
I did not say 2012.
She listened to it and she
did
typed 2013.
Really?
Yeah. So
you see what happens.
A wonderful thing. Even my wife feels comfortable correcting you, Trey. That should say something about the level of
you see, I've got this, I've got this cool lever here on my Macintosh that if you pull it towards you, it spins the computer backwards and you go back in time.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it was the ejector seat.
That too. Yeah, if you push it forward, that's what it does. But if you pull it backwards, this is where it takes you. All right, let's see. Topic for today is going to be, like I said, we're not going to go over all 51 of these things. We're just going to talk about some of these things. Jeff stumbled across this website that had this, and we're going to put a link to it in the show notes. And it just had some really good suggestions of some things to say. Some of them I thought were really incredible. Some of them were some of them are cheesy. Some of them are just like, what? Really? I wouldn't say that. But some of these were really insightful, didn't you think?
Yeah, there are a lot that beyond what's actually said, there's a principle behind it that I think that you and I can expound on a little bit. Maybe we can share some thoughts that we have about some of these that really jumped out at us.
Well, you know, I think a lot of times we get, you know, I call them negative cycles or corkscrews or whatever you want to call them. But sometimes we get into these patterns to where we kind of get stuck on the negative. It's probably one of the biggest stitch that seems to go through all the episodes that I do, like over at the sister station of the Family Podcast Network, is it's about learning how to get good at praising our kids, at using the things that we say to build them up. And I think we forget about this a lot. And I think that we've gotten so eloquent. We've gotten so adroit, so good at being negative at our kids. And don't get me wrong, kids need boundaries. They need us to tell them, hey, this is not what I'm looking for. I mean, kids need to know these things. They need to know what we're not looking for. But we've become so good at telling them what not to do that a lot of times we neglect, we forget even. It's not that we don't love our kids. It's not that we don't care about them.
Absolutely not. Yeah, but we fall into these patterns. And negativity, unfortunately, is kind of our default.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So we're going to talk a little bit today of, you know, we want to put the print out there. What are some of those good things that we can say? So Jeff, I'm wondering, do you have a number one favorite?
You know, I mentioned that there's some principles, and you've kind of already hit on it a little bit that one of the things that kind of runs through all of these is that in order to say good things to our kids, in order to be able to praise our kids in non-generic ways, but to be genuine and to be specific, is we kind of have to train our own brain to notice.
Yes, that's good.
Stuff about our kids. And that's what a lot of these do is they are, they demonstrate that as parents, we are attentive to our kids, that we see the things that they're doing well. And not only do we see them, but we train our brains to look for them.
Yeah.
And when we can do that as parents, then all these 51, suggested sayings, I think are stuff that would come naturally to us if we were adept at being able to see when our kids are doing good and notice those things so that we can be genuine about our praise.
You know, a lot of times when we train our brains to focus on the negative stuff solely, it kind of puts us in a position where even when the good stuff is occurring, even when those things that we want to see from them are occurring, because we've gotten so much in that habit of looking for those bad things, we'll absolutely miss those. I mean, I did that just a few nights ago. that I came in and I wanted the kids to get in bed. And I kept telling the kids, you need to get in bed, right? And they didn't get in bed. I came back and you need to get in bed. And they were up and moving around and you need to get in bed. Well, I didn't realize that I was focusing so much on the fact that I was telling them to get into bed. They were actually doing two things that they were supposed to be. Number one, they were obeying mama when she had said, please go in there and clean your room up real quick before you get in bed. Second off, by the time I got back in there the fifth time, and I, you know, by this time I've got the parental, you know, the parental word shotgun and I'm just ready to blast in both barrels. And I come in and I notice that the entire room is clean. And I've been spending this entire time getting on to kids who were, number one, doing exactly what they were asked to do by mama. But second off, we're doing a fantastic job of a 2-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 6-year-old straightening up their room. They weren't complaining. They weren't fussing. They weren't fighting each other. It was super late at night.
There was a lot of good stuff happening there.
There was tons. There was tons, way more than any negatives. And yet here I was sitting here being negative about something. Because my mind was just in that mode. It was in that negative, you know, like we often talk about a lot of the folks at FPN say, you know, we call it over there, I was in butt mode. We were just being a butt.
Well, you know, before we dive into looking at some of these suggestions that we found on this website, I'm wondering, Trey, thinking back to your childhood, do you have anything that you remember, some significant thing that your parents told you that just kind of that stuck with you?
Let's see. Okay, ask the question again. I'm sorry I was distracted.
Well, I'm wondering, you know, I'm looking at these things and some of the stuff is stuff that I've said to my kids before. Some stuff I intentionally do, some stuff I just, you know, I find myself doing just because I notice it. But I had a couple things pop into my head about when significant adults in my life, as I was growing up, said things to me that just kind of stuck with me, things that boosted my self-esteem, that helped me feel connected to them. And so I was just curious if there's anything, you know, as you were reading these or just if you can, you know, shuffle back through some memories real quick. If there's anything that you remember that an adult said to you that really made a difference in your life.
You know, it's going to sound really funny, but I remember that, you know, growing up, my dad was always a shooter. And so because of that, I had constant exposure to firearms and safeties and all that. You know, they did a great job of teaching that, but I didn't have a real intrinsic, you know, a quick run to it. It wasn't my favorite thing at the time because I had so much access to it. And, you know, as I started to get older, like 15, 16, I started to become more interested in doing it myself on my own volition, on my own choices, right? And I remember that one day I came in and I told Dad that I wanted this particular rifle dressed out this particular way and this different thing. And I remember that he stopped. And I remember very vividly that he stopped when he was reading. And I think he was writing a sermon or something like that for church. I remember he put down his Bible a little bit and he looked over the top of his glasses at me. And I remember him just saying these words. And I never heard this from him. I think this was literally the very first time, maybe the last time I ever heard it, but he just looked at me and he said, "That's my boy."
And that really, really stuck with you.
That was extremely significant to me because to me, the way I interpreted it was, I'm very proud of you for that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I had a similar, I'm not one of those kids whose parents never told them they loved them. As a matter of fact, if anything, it's something I heard on such a regular basis that it almost kind of became,
yeah, I know, yeah, mom, I know, and dad, I know.
You know, which is great. And I love that. That's a blessing that my parents gave to me. But I do remember a couple of times. And one time that's jumping out in my mind right now is I remember I was running some errands with Dad. And we got in the car. He said, "Hey, son, you know, you want to go with me?" I said, "Yeah, sure." So I got in the car and we're riding around. And he and I were just talking and chatting. And we got to wherever it was we were going. I don't even remember where it was. But he stopped and he said, "Jeff, this is really weird. You didn't ask me where we were going. You just got in the car and went with me." And I said, "Well, I trusted that you knew what you were doing, and I was just kind of along for the ride." And he said, "I like that. It makes me feel good that you trust me and that you're not questioning every little thing of where we're going and what we're doing. And I like that." And having that feedback from my dad that something I said made him feel good, made me feel good. Yeah. And I remember that moment.
Yeah, that's really good. You know, I think that often we see these things. We're going to talk about some cute things today. I mean, we're going to be honest. Some of these phrases are going to be cute. Some are going to be pretty heavy. And there's kind of a gamut there that goes, you know, back and forth, kind of on a spectrum of what we're going to talk about today. And I think that these aren't just phrases that are nice to say. These aren't just things that we throw out there to make them feel good. It does do that, but it's not just about that. In a lot of ways, these can be the very things that shape who our kids become. You know, Jeff, I've always been kind of considered a disorganized guy. Now, in my disorganization, I know where everything's at. It's cluttered,
right.
But literally, I mentally can file where everything is at, and I know where to go for it. However,
nobody else would be able to decipher it, but you know where it's at.
Exactly. And right. I remember one time that this lady had come up to me, and this was just a few years ago whenever I was actually working at New Horizons where Jeff and I met, and she walked up to me and she said, "You're just a really organized person," and she walked off. And I remember thinking to myself, no, I'm not. But you know what happened? Every time she came around, I wanted to live up to what she had said. Because she had set that expectation for me, I found myself wanting to be – and I'm telling you, she actually motivated me to be more organized based solely off the fact that she saw me as being that way. And mm-hmm. I wanted to live up to it.
Well, and the same principle happens as we develop the skill as parents of being attentive to what our kids are doing and then being intentional in our praise of them is we're participating in this identity formation that
yeah,
is a natural
good.
Process of something that is happening naturally for them. But when we do it actively, that means that we are actually taking an active role in deliberately shaping how our kids think about themselves. And that's a pretty powerful thing because if I can help my child think of themselves as a certain type of person, well, when they think of themselves, when that's an internal motivation for them, just like you were saying, you wanted to be more organized because she saw you as an organized person. And so that made you want to live up to that expectation. And so it became an internal motivation.
And, you know, it works in the reverse as well. If you see your kid as a turd, as sure. defiant, as resistant, as always wanting to make me upset, disobedient, great point, then kids eventually will give up on trying to make you happy, and they will live up to whatever expectation you set. Not in all cases, but many will. They'll finally say, you know what, if that's what you're going to say to me, I might as well just be that way because it doesn't do me any good not to.
That's right.
Okay, so are we ready? Are we ready?
Yeah, let's jump into some of these.
Okay, here's
go ahead.
I've got my first one here. I'm going to change up a little bit, and I'm doing these on purpose. Some of these are really cute. Some of them, I like the premise behind them. I don't like how they were worded because they wouldn't work in Gibsonese. So I'm going to translate these into what Gibson family would say.
Right.
But one of the ones they suggested was that, like, the way that you do a certain thing is such a perfect addition to our family. I love this one. I use this so frequently because I love to talk, like, to my son and say, man, your personality is so perfect for us because he is such a good one about reminding us when we need to be compassionate because he has a compassionate heart.
Yeah.
And sometimes Cora will come in and she's just, bit my finger. Oh, my God. She's my two-year-old. And she's just acting like her finger has been, you know, just totally cut off. And I'm just like, wrap it up, kid. Come on. I don't have time for this. Just hush it. We don't have time for this. And Grant will come up and he'll pull her to her and he'll sit there and just stroke her hair and kiss her little finger for her. And sometimes I have to go, man, I am such a butt. And so I love
using
this. Here's
my son modeling how I
Yeah, exactly. So right. I love this one because it's so good to make sure that not only that we identify what they're good at, but what separates them from the others.
Mm-hmm. You know, you started at the top of the list. That was number one on this blog post that we found. Number two is one that jumped out at me. You know,
ooh,
being
yeah.
able to say, and what it is, number two says, I'm sorry. Will you please forgive me for, and then you talk about specifically what you need
that's good.
Forgiveness for. And I think that's a powerful thing because as adults, it's hard for us to step away from the authoritarian role and be able to admit that we've made a mistake to our kids.
Yeah.
A lot of times we see that as such weakness that we are unwilling to admit mm-hmm. that we've done the wrong thing or made a bad decision, when in actuality, we're not doing our kid any favors by modeling that adults are never wrong. In fact, we would do much better to teach our kids that, you know, everybody makes mistakes. And so, you know, this is how you fix them, right?
Yeah.
So not only are we giving them permission to make mistakes on their own, but also we're modeling for them, you know, what do you do when you have made a mistake? You got to make it right. And so saying I'm sorry to your kid is a really powerful thing.
You know,
forgiveness,
You know, you bring up a really good point here too, because this also, and I hadn't thought about this until you said it, but it also sets a kid up to learn how to forgive as well. Because I was thinking about a situation the other day where I totally jacked up. I totally blew up at the kids. I lost my cool. I know I lost their respect out of that moment. And I went back in there and I pulled them all three in and I sat down. And I said, guys, I want y'all to hear me say what I did was not okay. And we're going to put a stop to that. I should not have shouted at you guys. I was way too angry. And I'm very, very sorry. And my daughter, she brought me to tears with this, but she reached out and she put her little hand on my face and she goes, that's all right, Daddy. I forgive you. And it wasn't that snooty I forgive you. I mean, it was just so tender. It was just,
genuine,
Dad, I forgive you, Daddy. And my gosh, and it was a reminder that by not doing that, I'm also not giving them the opportunity to learn how to forgive.
Right. That's good stuff. All right, so what's next on your list?
All right, next one for me is, I love this one. This was number four on the list. I want to hang out with you tonight. What do you want to do? Just you. I just want to hang out with you. See, I love to do this. We don't, when you have as many kids as we do, this gets a little more tricky. I mean, you know, because there's always a kid here, and it's, I mean, we don't feel always comfortable saying, okay, I'm going to spend time with you, Grant, but you two, you know, Corin and Anne, I'm sorry, I'm not going to spend time with you. But
what I'm really inclusive.
Exactly. So what I typically do is if there's a little trip that I've got to do to town, or if Cora's got a little errand that she's got to run into town, just, hey, you want to come with me? Sure, Dad. And we put it on a rotation, and we keep track of each other through accountability between the two of us and who's next. And we try to make sure that we take that time individually with each kid and go out and do something. And then while we're out there, we just let them, hey, what do you want to do next? You know, we let them pick something. Let's go look at houses, Dad. That's a thing in our houses. We just drive around. We look at houses. It mm-hmm. really has nothing to do with houses, Jeff. It's more about the relationship and the talking sure. and the chatting and the one-on-one time. But I love this one because it just allows us to have those kinds of intimate moments.
I agree with you. And it does become challenging because in a lot of families, we get caught up in inclusion.
Yes.
We gotta do a little bit for everybody. And in doing a little bit for everybody, nobody gets to feel really
right.
special.
That's good. You know? That's a great way to put it.
And so being able to individualize and you know, running errands and stuff is a great way to be able to do things one-on-one with kids because, I mean, and there's some days I make so many trips to Walmart that I can have individual hang time with each kid, you know, three times to Walmart in one day. So,
you know, I'm sorry.
But yeah, we do similar stuff too. And, you know, you talked about driving around that brought to mind one thing that I like to do sometimes is, we've got technology and creativity colliding here in order to have a fun moment. But sometimes when we're across town, I'll pull out my iPhone and I'll use the map feature and bring up our home address and then have it figure out where we are. And then I'll you know get directions from here to there as we're heading home. And there's a line that we could follow. And I'll hand the phone to one of my kids and say, okay, you're going to navigate us home. And sometimes they'll follow the line. Sometimes they'll
fine.
Make detours that. And stuff like that. And sometimes it takes us a little bit longer to get home, but it's a fun thing for the kids to say, oh, okay, I know the fastest way to get home would be go straight here, but turn right. And I'm, okay, all right, we'll turn right. And I let them get us off. But there's always a little blue blip headed toward a red blip on our map. And so we always make it home. And it's a fun little way to connect with the kids.
Man, I absolutely love that. And, you know, I want to broaden this to be other things, too. When we talk about trips, you know, for me, sometimes the trip is I'm just running out to the storage building outside. I mean, we've got a little storage building out in the side that we keep some of our other stuff in it. And frequently I've got to go out there and maybe I've got to go, you know, bring in some winter clothes or go out there and just, you know, fill up some gasoline into something or whatever it is. And a lot of times I'll just grab whoever's nearest to me. Hey, come on with me. Why don't you come out here and help me, you know, and I'll take that kiddo out there. And just even just a 5-minute stint, it's amazing the level of one-on-one connectivity you can have in these little moments like this.
Well, and the more time we spend with our kids, the more opportunity we have to catch them doing good things and praise them. So ooh, it all kind of dovetails.
That is good. So what do you got next, Jeff?
Yeah, you know, I'm sure we could do an entire show or seven on this next one. But number nine, once again, it's that noticing thing. It says, I saw how you – insert specific thing here.
Yeah, I love
saw
that.
How you put away the dishes. And I'm so proud of you. And I love specific praise. I love genuine specific mm-hmm. praise that yep. really highlights the way my child has done something so that they know that I'm not just throwing out some kind of, yeah, good job. But, you know, I like to notice things. So, you know, if like the other day I asked Eleanor to pick up some stuff in her room and I wasn't trying for you know, sparkling clean or anything. I just wanted the mess off the floor because the dog had gotten in there and chewed up some Kleenex and little bits and pieces stuff all over the floor. And so I just asked her, I said, listen, will you take 5 minutes and go in there and just kind of pick up the floor? And so often it's a struggle with Ellie because she immediately defaults to, do I have to do it by myself? Or do you want it sparkly clean? And I get this pushback. I'm like, oh, just go in there and do, just work at it for a minute. But this time she went in there and I didn't hear anything from her, and I wandered off to do something else. I came back a few minutes later, and she had done exactly what I asked her to
do. Oh, wow, man.
It was, and I looked at her, and I said, Eleanor. She's like, what? I was like, that's – yes, exactly. Thank you so much. You went in, and I had in my mind that you would pick up, you know, this or that, but you really – you cleaned not only what I was – wanting you to clean, but you actually straightened up some other stuff, and then you took the trash and didn't just put it in your trash can. You took it out to the main trash. Thank you so much for doing such a good job cleaning up. That I'm proud of you. And something just simple like that to target in and do something specific, it gives them a sense of pride. And, and because they know that it's genuine and it's targeted directly for something that they know that they did.
You know, I think that's good. We, you know, talking about how you can screw this up and move it into something good. You know, we got it to a stint with, you know, Grant comes up a lot because he's my more tender. He's my sensitive. He's my much more emotionally connected kiddo. And so, you know, a lot of the behaviors that he can exemplify because of that, if I'm not careful, if I don't watch my filter, how I'm seeing him, I can get real negative about it. A while back, we had an issue to where anytime we would tell him to go do something, moving from something fun to something that he didn't like let's say he was playing Xbox, and then we say, okay, we need to go straighten our room up real quick. He would have this just meltdown of just, you know, the ambulance, sure. The ambulance driving by the house whine thing that he would move into. And don't get me wrong, I think he was genuinely upset. I don't think he was doing it just to keep get out of it. I really think that he was upset, and I think that was one of his natural reactions. He didn't want to leave his game, and I get that. But, you know, this was one of those things that Corey and I looked at each other like, oh, heck no, we can't deal with this.
Nip that in the bud.
We can't do this for the next however long. You know, right. So we started talking about – so we said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to teach him what we want from him. And then we're going to reinforce him, right? Going back to this praising thing, like what Jeff's bringing up here. So what we did was that he started out as one. We said, hey, hang on, bud. What we want you to say is just go, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, whenever we ask you to do these things. And so, you know, we tried that. And I remember that first day where he goes, we said, Grant, we need to stop playing. You got 5 more minutes to play Xbox, and I need you to stop, and we're going to clean up. And he goes, yes, sir. Just like that, it just morphed. It met, it was this Mighty Morphin Power Ranger right in from the wine into the yes, sir.
And you knew the expectation.
Exactly. And so we praised the living snot out of him for that. And then guess what's happened? Now, every single time, he'll be in the middle of an Xbox game. All right, Grant, it's time to clean our room. Yes, sir. And he'll stand up and he'll snap a salute. And I love it. It just makes me happy deep down into my bones. But I love that because we spent that time, like you were talking about, making sure that not only do we tell him, you know, we didn't spend too much time on what he was doing wrong. He's very good at doing what we don't want. So we didn't spend a whole lot of time on that. We just told him what we wanted him to do it, and then we made sure that every dad gum time he said yes, sir, or yes, ma'am, from that point on, he got lots of praise, lots of attention.
Yep, and that's something, like you said, that you've reiterated and we've gone over before. That's kind of almost a mantra, positive reinforcement on FPN and Real Family Guy stuff. So good stuff.
I like that one.
What's next on your list?
Okay, the next one is I'm actually going to back it up to one of my favorite ones. I love this statement right here. Number 7, I trust you. You know, I had a moment where I got to practice this one. You know, I went to some family's house over this last weekend for my wife's grandmother's 80th birthday. And while we were there, you know, just the way we run our kids, the way we raise our kids, very different from a lot of way this family raises them. And we very much let our kids do risky things. We let them take risks. I mean, we don't let them take unnecessary risks. We don't let them run in the middle of the road with a shotgun, you know, or stuff like that.
They'll shoot your eye out.
Yeah. but we let them do things that are considered risky, and they have this wrought iron fence out there on some brick. And Cora, my 2-year-old, got out there and wanted to climb over it. And she started to climb over it. Well, the mother hens, you know, with this very different style of parenting, were just like, oh, do you need some help? Do you need some help? And I was like, ladies, sit down.
She's got this.
And my daughter looked at me, and I could tell, I mean, she was about halfway getting over this fence. And she looked me in the eye, 2 years old. I could read that look in her face. It was like, oh, dang, can I do this, Dad?
Yeah, I forgot to ask.
I looked at it, not even about permission. It was like, am I capable? Because after the chicken hens had come around, and just, blah, 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 I could see that fear in her eyes. It was like, maybe I shouldn't. And I remember that I locked, at 2 years old, I locked eyes with her, and I just smiled at her and very reassuringly said, I trust you. And that little girl scaled all that, snagged her little pants on the fence and got stuck for a minute. And the ladies came back and said, ladies, hang on. And I looked at her again. I said, I trust you. And she just looked down, and she looked back up, and she grabbed where it was snagging, boop, popped that sucker off, and then jumped down and ran off. And I think this is such a valuable thing. Sometimes our kids just knowing that we have faith that they can do these things, that we believe that you've struggled with this tennis shoe, but I trust you. You can do this. I trust you with my iPhone. I trust you to climb over this gate and not crash. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a component that we miss a lot, especially in this kind of very overprotective parenting that you see kind of cropping up, is we don't allow kids to take risks and hear us say to them, I trust you.
I think it's a big deal. And it actually kind of dovetails with the next one that I was going to mention, which is number 17, where we get to reflect on the decision-making skills of our kids. Number 17 on this list is, that was a really wise choice.
Oh, I like that.
And I was thinking, as you were talking about telling your kids that you trust them, that there have been some opportunities where my kids have not made wise choices about something, and it's affected my trust of them. And so, you know, instead of getting upset about it or making them feel bad about it, I want to take that as an opportunity to turn it into a teachable moment. I remember one time I was asking, it was bedtime for something, the expectation was kids would go to bed and no electronics, you know, but it's time to go to sleep. And I saw Mary Hannah sneaking up the staircase, kind of holding her arm a little bit funny. Like there was something on the other side of her body and she was using her body to kind of shield what it was, but it was too big to just kind of fit in her hand. And you know, you can tell when your kids are trying to be sneaky and failing miserably at it. And so I looked over at her like, Mary Hannah. And she kind of froze. I said, what are you holding? And she went with the nothing. Right.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
yeah.
Let's try that one again. And she realized that either she was going to have to just keep on lying and it was just going to get worse. So she turned around. She was holding a DS, a Nintendo DS that she was trying to sneak into bed so she could play on it for a little while. And I said, no, Mary Hannah, that wasn't a very smart decision because I noticed that you were, you know, I could tell. And then on top of that, you lied to me. And maybe I want to trust you. I want to be able to, when you say something to me, I believe it because you're telling me the truth. And
that
wasn't the smartest decision, was it? But then there was so let's go back and try this again. Give me the DS. I'm disappointed that you lied to me, but let's make it right. Now, it's bedtime. Do you have anything you're taking with you? No, sir. All right, we'll go on to bed. So, you know, it wasn't one of those things where I wanted to beat her up about it, but at the same time, I had to acknowledge that that wasn't a very smart choice, you know. And I love it when I'm able to tell my children, wow, you know, that was a really good choice. So there's both sides of that. But so many of these things on this list really kind of dovetail when you think about them. You know, you can kind of mix them up and combine them for different things. And this was a good case of being able to turn a moment where they hadn't made such a good decision into something where we could talk about trust and how behavior affects trust.
Well, you know, I mean, I think we could do an entire show on just that situation right there. And because the things that I'm so fond of in what you did with that was, number one, you know, it was about reinforcing, hey, good, you made a wise choice, and I appreciate that. But, you know, I think a lot of times, without even meaning to, we set our kids up to fail. And we see what they're doing wrong, and we drop the hammer on them, you know, the hammer of parental justice, and then we leave it there. And a lot of times, kids just haven't really thought it out. They've never really stopped to process out, what should I do? Why should I do it? And a lot of times, if we just give kids the opportunity to rectify mistakes, they'll do it.
Right then and there.
Right then and there. And it's not as big of a deal as we make. I mean, don't get me wrong. It is a big deal, but it doesn't have to be. And when we give our kids that second chance, who doesn't wish they had the second chance? And don't get me wrong, I know kids can take advantage of that, but a lot of times all they need is to make that, and then you nailed it, then you reinforce them for doing it. Wow, right. What a wise choice that is. I am proud of you for choosing the right thing here. Because Mary Hannah could have kept making choices that weren't right, and yet that part of her character kicked in that says, I'm not going to anymore. And that is beautiful, and then you can praise the snot out of them for that. That's a good one.
Indeed, indeed.
Okay, so the next one that I had up was number 24. I love this one. What do you think? You know, I think a lot of times we have a tendency, especially when kids are first born, we make all their decisions for them. We make decisions sure. what they're gonna wear, what they're gonna eat, what they're gonna do, where they're gonna lay, and until they start getting mobile, you know, I mean, everything is at our decision.
Sure.
And as they get older, a big part of that parenting is kind of handing that baton over to kids and allowing them to make more choices. And so I think this one doesn't necessarily come naturally because up until a certain age, we do it all for them.
Oh, yeah, and we become conditioned and fall into this pattern of, it's our job to do and do and do.
Yes.
But at some point, as parents, if we want to be good parents and understand where our kids are at, we've got to make that transition to where, like you said, we're teaching them how to do for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so good. And the reason this one is so good to me is because this is one of those where I'm like, man, I need to be doing that more. Because, you know, especially with my daughter, Anna, and really Grant too, both of them are sharp as tacks. And they're both getting to that age where I need to start asking them that. What do you think? What do you think? See, now I do a version of this. Like a lot of times, my kids will come up and say, "Dad, what are you doing?" And I'll ask them. It's not to be a butt, but say, "What do you think I'm doing?" And it's not because I don't want to answer their question. It's because I really want them to stop and think. But I mean this one a little more in like, let's say we're thinking about buying we're looking at getting a couple new dogs. We're looking at getting a couple dogs that are pretty neat dogs. They're actually called Borbles. They're called Borbles, a weird name, but they're South African Mastiffs. But, you know, we during this whole process, I had never actually stopped to think to ask my kids, what do you guys think about these dogs?
Right.
And we had asked them about these dogs, and my daughter, Anna, brought up some amazing points. She asked them some questions that I was like, dang, I had never thought of this. And I realized that, number one, she got some ownership in that decision, and she loved it. She got to have some input on what she thought we should do, and she made some suggestions for some toys for these dogs that I was like, that is a brilliant idea, because they do like to have these particular types of toys. And so, you know, asking kids, what do you think, and getting them on board and letting them being able to make choices as well. I even think that this is just general respect. When you stop and ask somebody what you think, that puts you on a level playing field. It says that I trust your opinions just as much as I do my own.
That's what this is a great example of. One of the statements that jumped out at me is as having a lot of other principles that go along with it that you can take from there. And when you examine family dynamics and you see, you know, families that where parents haven't made that good transition from doing for our kids to transitioning to helping them do for themselves. This question doesn't come naturally because the parents are still in the mode of, I've got to do it. I'm in charge. I'm responsible. I'm accountable. But when we can start making this transition, this simple question, what do you think, is it's an empowering question, because
yes, it is.
Suddenly it gives a voice to kids. And it elevates them to having a voice at the table. And to finding their place in the family, because you'd be surprised how many people grow up in their family feeling like they don't have a say.
And
although the developmental task of a lot of kids is identity formation and connection to family, well, they're part of a family by default, but they never feel like they're part of a family because they never have a voice,
especially
the younger kids.
Yeah, that's really heavy.
And so the family dynamics can really shift when parents are intentional about seeking the input of their kids. And not only is it good for the kids' development, but you've highlighted, it's amazing as parents when we kind of take that creative cap off our kids and let them go crazy by giving us, you know, input. It's amazing some of the insights our kids have and the perspective that their innocence has, or their just, you know, their childlike point of view that really can enhance our families if we let them have that voice. And so it's a courageous thing to do, but it's also a smart thing for parents to do, to seek the input of their kids, to help them feel included and valued. This statement right here, what do you think, is a powerful, powerful one. I liked it too.
You know, I remember a few years ago I had a family in my office, and they were trying to come up with he was like a 16-year-old man. He just got his license, and a young man. He was just ready to go out there, and they set like an 11 o'clock curfew for him, you know, and he kept coming in late, and they were so mad at me. We're going to take your car away and all these other things, and you're going to do this and you're going to do that. And it just got so finally I stopped and I said, what do you think is fair? And that kid sat there and he said, well, I asked him point blank. I said, I mean, are you saying you don't think you should have a curfew? And he was like, no, I don't care if I have a curfew. I said, okay, so just tell me, what do you think is fair?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, God is my witness. He goes, I think I should be allowed to come at 11:15. And the parents, I saw their parents, and I looked over at them, and I motioned just to shut it. You know, just don't say anything. And they sat there because they were going to make this a fight. And they stopped and they said, okay, 11:15. You know what happened?
He was home because he set the curfew. He was home at 11:15.
11:15 or 11:10. They said he's been showing up at 11:10 every single night. All of a sudden, his parents said, you're important. You're saying this matters. He had a buy into it. Never happened again. I'm like, literally, like, I hate using those kinds of infinitive, you know, forever and ever and ever, but never happened again.
Powerful stuff. powerful stuff. I'm going to back up a little bit for my next one. You were at number 24. I'm going to go back to number 20.
Yeah.
This is another one of those statements that that shows parents' attentiveness to something. When we notice that our kids are going through something, being able to connect with them is important. Yeah. And we don't want to make it seem, we don't want to make it all about us. If they're going through a difficult time, you know, we don't want to take the attention off of how they're processing things to make it all about us. Number 20 says, I remember when I was experiencing this, I felt so, and then you talk about how you felt. I don't know if that's like what you're going through, but it was a tough time for me. Right.
Yeah,
this is a really humanizing statement because it makes it one, it makes it okay to talk about things. It demonstrates and models how to be able to talk about your emotions and to be vulnerable. But it's also, you know, ironically, parents think I've got to be tough. I can't let my kid see any weakness or anything like that. But that kind of strength is, it's a brutal strength because we all make mistakes and nobody's perfect. And so by showing some vulnerability and being able to admit that we've had some difficult times and that those we're giving our kids permission to talk about it. And in talking about it, we're helping them build strengths of being able to regulate their own emotions. And so it's a really, really powerful thing to be able to notice when our kids are going through a tough time and then connect with them and give them permission to explore it in a way that allows them to process it in a healthy way.
Yeah, I think that's so good. I think that I love how you said that it's humanizing it. It allows the kids to connect that, oh, mom and dad have been through these things as well. And the other reason I was kind of fond of that one is that it didn't say, I know what you're going through. And
well,
that to
right.
me, that's a cardinal no-no of talking
that's
to
right.
anybody going through hard things. You do not. You may understand some of the similarities of it because, you know, grief is kind of similar in the feelings that it produces. Mm-hmm. But you never know if a person is close or far, you know, from each other or any of those things. You're just not that person. There's too many extraneous variables. You mm-hmm. cannot copy and paste a feeling or an experience from one person to the next. Even if they look and seem similar, they're not. And so I love how they took this approach. You know, I was feeling this way. Maybe you're feeling that way too. And I love that it keeps that question mark. I think that's a wise statement.
It takes a kind of tentative approach. I don't know exactly, but maybe this gets close to what you're feeling like. And that way it opens up a dialogue about things.
Yeah, that's good. My next one actually is going down to number 29. I love this one. I'm so glad you're home. Now, we don't use this phrasing, I'm so glad you're home in our house. But we have a thing like whenever I get home – And I owe this completely to my wife, but the kids just go, Daddy! And they all, mm-hmm. and my wife started it. She would, every time I would come home, she'd go, look, it's Daddy! And then so the kids would just, they'd get fired up by that because Mommy's getting excited, and they would come run to the door. And so me arriving home is a very big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that I have seized and I've taken a hold of is whenever my kids are gone, if they stay at Meemaw's house over the night, when they walk in that door, I blast out of that couch and go, Annie,
you're
Granny,
home,
Corey, you know, and I go and I do that with him because I want them to know that them coming home is a celebration to me.
That's right.
I want them to know that they are special to me. I don't do that for anybody else. Not even you, Jeff. And you're one of my closest friends. And I don't even jump out of my chair and go, Jeffy!
You don't want me to tell about the time that I showed up at your office and you know, did a flying tackle in the hallway and give me a big hug?
Okay, you can tell them about that. But anyway, that's I want my kids to know that them coming home is special to me and it's celebratory. And I'll do that. And as they get older and they may get more embarrassed by that, I probably will move more to, oh, man, and maybe get up, give them a hug, maybe dying it down. I don't know. Maybe I won't do that. Maybe I'll always keep it just that excited. But letting my kids know that I am glad when they get home.
You know, being able to share how we feel about other members of our family is an important thing, and that's a good segue for me because the next one I wanted to point out was number 26, and this was written from a female's perspective. So she put in here, "I love your dad so much," but I love telling my kids how much
yes.
I love their mother.
This was one of mine too.
I love your mother so much, and I like to talk about what I like about her, I like for my kids to know it. And I think that that's a really important thing. There's a lot of popular stuff out there, sayings and things that one of the best things that you can do for your kids is to love their mom or their dad. You know, the best blessing you can give your kids is to love your spouse. And I think that's true. Verbalizing it means that not only do we show it by how we treat them respectfully and lovingly. But being able to verbalize it also gives it that contextual piece that makes it okay to talk about how much we love our spouses. And that's something I want my kids to do with their spouse when they grow up, is to be able to talk about how awesome they are.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, Jeff, I'm thinking one more apiece. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, and that's the lure of this is, you know, we could probably
I could do these. So yeah. Many of them. Yeah, I could do almost all 51. I agree.
But we do have to be respectful of our listeners' time. We want to give them a great experience without necessarily dominating the day here. So, yeah, I think one more piece is good. So what's your next one?
My next one is number 44. Do you feel like I'm understanding you? See, we don't use that exact vernacular in our household, but it's almost that. We say things like, okay, did I understand that? Did I get that right? That's probably the biggest one. I say, did I get that right? Because, you know, especially with younger kids, a lot of times their language and communication skills are still growing. They're still developing. And mm-hmm. So, you know, my son will come to me and he'll try to explain something to me, and I'm like, oh my gosh, okay. Actually, typically the worst is he says something and then I go, oh, okay, I got this. Right. And so I've learned the value in him saying something. And if I think there's any confusion, starting it over and saying, okay, so you're saying this, right?
Mm-hmm.
No. Okay. All right. And then I'll do it again. I'll say, you're saying this, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. See, but even that to me says no. Okay. Yeah. So, you know how you can hear that intonation means when people are uncertain, their tone will drop down at the end of their sentence. Yeah. And so I hear that and I say, okay, I didn't get that right. Tell me what I'm getting wrong. And I'll do that with my kids until I get that right statement, until I'm really understanding. And that's so valuable on multiple levels. Number one, it helps us work on communication. I mean, it's, you know,
sure, it's great communication skill.
Exactly. It helps me make sure that I'm understanding them. It makes sure that I'm not being presumptuous or assuming something that they're doing that they're not doing, or vice versa. But on the flip side of it too, it also teaches kids to realize that sometimes we get it wrong and to look for and work till we can get that right statement. I mean, it's one of the best things that I love teaching my kids, because in a lot of ways, it's one skill that I'm setting them up for in marriage that can be absolutely invaluable. That ability to know what your spouse is saying and listen and sit there and have that corrected over and over and over until you get it right can serve them in any venue. But
sure,
things like marriages and employees or employers, it can sure. be, I mean, that applies to everything.
It really does. It really does. And, you know, we've done different podcasts about communication, some other things. And that's something that, when I'm doing, communication work with couples, or even with family systems in my office, that we almost always go back to the skill, and I call it paraphrasing. It's a basic communication skill, and it will serve you well in any relationship.
Yeah. Agreed.
All right. Well, let me wrap up with not necessarily my favorite, but one of my favorites here. Going back up to number 31, being able to say to your kid, "You're one of the best gifts I've ever received, and I'm humbled that God gave me you." Right. This goes back to trying to help our kids feel valued and loved and cared for, but also helping them to be able to value themselves. I absolutely love being a dad. It is an amazing experience. I can remember not being a dad. I remember when Amelia and I were able to say, "Hey, let's go do something," and just pack up and go. And those were good days. I enjoyed that. So I can remember not being a dad, but I can't imagine not being a father.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It has just changed me in so many ways. And being able to convey that to my kids, that their presence in my life is not only something that where I'm here for them and I'm shaping them and it's work that I'm doing. They're shaping me.
Yep.
Mm. And letting them know how valuable I see them just because they are, not because they're doing anything or because of anything other than just the fact that they exist, makes me a better person. And to be thankful and to be able to demonstrate gratitude. And also I like the second part of that. I'm so humbled that God gave me you to be able to connect it back to our spiritual beliefs and be able to help my kids understand that they're not just a gift in my life, that they're a gift that helps me connect with God.
Yeah, that's good.
That's a great thing.
That's good. Man, that is a heavy one. I love that one. All right, Jeff, anything else we need to hit on before we wrap it up today?
You know, I'm actually really excited, because even though there's a lot of the stuff that comes naturally to me, there's some good stuff on this list. So
I
encourage the viewer or listeners, to go to the website, take a look at the show notes, and go to this website, look through all the ones that we covered, and then look through and see if there's some other stuff that jumps out to you, and then put it into practice. Say this stuff to your kids. Find opportunities and look for ways to be attentive and to notice when our kids are doing stuff right, so that we can praise the heck out of them. It will make a difference in your lives and your relationships, and things will be amazing in your families, I guarantee.
That's good. All right, guys. Well, that's all that we have for this episode of the Real Family Guys podcast. We sure do hope you guys have a great week and a weekend. Don't forget, if you guys have any questions for us, any topics that you want to hear from Jeff and I, something you want us to go over, or just a situation maybe you want us to throw out there and do a show over, we want to hear from you. We want your questions. We want your comments, your topics, and even your encouragement. Guys, if you want to do that, you can email us at TreyGibson@TheFamilyPodcastNetwork.com or Jeff at
TexasFamilyInstitute.org.
And then also, if you want to leave us a voicemail on TheFamilyPodcastNetwork.com, over on the right-hand side, it says, Ask Trey a Question. If you have a microphone attached to your computer, you can leave a slight voicemail, a small voicemail, and record it right into your computer. It'll send an email to me, and we can get you on the show. Guys, you can also give us a phone call at 661-PARENT-0. Again, that is 661-PARENT-0. Leave a message. Make sure you let us know on that voicemail that you're doing this for the Real Family Guys podcast. We would appreciate it. And guys, you can always connect with us over at Facebook as well. We do have a Family Podcast Network show. We are going to get a Real Family Guys podcast show up on a Facebook page sooner rather than later. I promise you we'll get that. Until then, FPN can be kind of our safe harbor until then. Anything else I left out, Jeff, before we wrap it up?
No, you covered good stuff there. We look forward to any feedback and encouragement. And as always, we will put together another great show, and we'll talk to you guys next Friday.
Holy smokes of face pie. That is really hot tea. Woo! Okay, I'm good. All right.
I thought you icified it, man.
I did. I put two ice cubes in it, man, and it still almost melted my lips.
I'm all I have to do is sit here and look pretty. I've got a face for podcasting. You do all the work, man.